You're listening to a special report from The Lens. Ed Quatrevo was New Orleans Inspector General for 8 years. In that role, he was in charge of cleaning up waste and corruption in city government. During his tenure, the Office of Inspector General dug into hotel tax collections, garbage removal contracts, the New Orleans Police Department's handling of sex crimes, and the Sewerage and Water Board. Quatrevo left at the end of his second term in 2017, citing health problems. But the office was mired in controversy and infighting at the time. Quatrevo recently reached out to The Lens with a piece he wrote touting successes at the office under his leadership and the problems that he says led to his retirement. Lens editor Charles Maldonado sat down with Ed Quatrevo for this interview.
Thank you for coming here today. I appreciate it. We've decided to publish the essay that you have written. I guess I just wanted to start with, what was it that prompted you to write this essay?
Well, as I left office, there was an incident, and it gained all the attention. There was never any retrospective. There was never any summary. And I thought that was lacking, and that the public deserved it. And I thought we had a great deal of success, and I thought we had challenges, and in the end, the experiment did not work. So I wanted to have, you know, somewhere a statement of what occurred during the period. Completely separately, I was invited to write an academic journal on the same article, on the same subject, rather. And I chose to do that, and that's why it was written in the form of an academic journal. But then that didn't work right, because academics being academics, it wasn't a good fit. And so that's why it's here.
You said just now that I believe the experiment didn't work out. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, I think the problem is structurally flawed from the beginning. In two important ways. One was the melding, if you will, of the independent police monitor into the OIG. If I'd been around when people were considering it, I would have advised against it, because the missions are so divergent. They're so different. One's a public advocate, the other's an auditor, investigator, and evaluator. And one operates, you know, in the PR mode, and one is constrained to only give scientifically backed evidence and, you know, to present a case. So they're completely different, and almost immediately those differences appeared in almost everything we did, and which is why I finally decided it wasn't going to work. The other major, and proceeded to get a separation of the offices. Secondly, when you look back at the legislation, the OIG ordinance, it has a couple of flaws. The main one is that it put a term in for the IG, which is completely different from the federal system on which people tried to emulate. But it didn't happen. They put the hooks in there. There's a 4-year term, which is an exceedingly short period in terms of government progress, reform progress, or anything like that, especially when you're establishing a new office. So it's just too short a time period. It places pressure on the, indirectly, whether intended or not, it places pressure on the OIG almost to perform as a politician, which is contrary to the nature of our work.
And you say a 4-year term is too short. Do you support the elimination of a term?
Yes.
In its entirety?
Yes.
And how would we...
Cause.
Only for cause. And cause would mean in this context what sort of thing?
Well, it'd be personal misconduct, be a commission of a law, an impropriety, you know. Suppose the IG who's required to live in Orleans Parish doesn't have a car registered in the state of Louisiana.
Right.
Okay.
And that would be the only...
It'd be that kind of thing,
right? Yeah, but that would be the only reason an IG could be removed.
Certainly not over the work product.
Sure.
And the ethics board had no has no statutory authority over the OIG's work products. Mm-hmm. But they're pretending like they do. They even testified before the city council on the budget that they were going to increase their oversight of those elements.
So just to give context, the ethics review board is sort of the oversight body of the IG.
But it's not.
Right.
In the legislation, mm-hmm. but they've assumed.
Can you explain the relationship as the legislation puts it between the Ethics Review Board and the IG? They appoint the IG, correct?
That's it.
Yeah.
That's all they have. They have no right to the products, work products, mm-hmm. to influence the work products. And in fact, they should be prohibited. I didn't realize it was necessary to say that if you're involved with one of the city entities that the OIG examines, you should, you know, recuse yourself immediately.
Right.
Because you're conflicted.
Right. And we have had members of the review board in the past who have been involved with the city, contracts or relationships, financial relationships with the city, financial relationships with the Sewerage and Water Board, which is a major focus area for your office as well. Is the appointment process for the Ethics Review Board a problem as well? They're nominated by university presidents and appointed by the city council, is that correct?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. The way the mayor chooses from a list of three for six of the positions.
Nominated
by university presidents,
right.
Which I was told was a function not of intelligent organizational design, but a something to placate racial diversity.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was told.
Right.
So, you know, no, I don't have any more confidence. I don't believe anyone there is more ethical than I am. So, you know, why the college presidents?
Mm-hmm.
And who's to say that college presidents could turn in names that were already dealt with?
Right.
It's not an independent board.
Sure.
I mean, think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The chairman who was there at my time at the inn.
Mr. Alan Miller.
Yes. He was appointed by the mayor. Because the mayor has one sole selection.
Mm-hmm.
Then he received a contract from the Sewerage and Water Board, presumably from its chairman, the mayor.
Mm-hmm. That's yes, absolutely. And I would we are going to revisit that in a little bit, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I'd like to go sort of more go in order through what's in your essay. But to start with, before we get into all that, I do want to just ask, you know, so you, can you explain the circumstances under which you left in late 2017 and what was it that made you decide to leave the office after your eight years there?
Well, first of all, the action taken by the Ethics Review Board in 2016.
And for context, this was the action taken to conduct a national search for a new inspector general.
Correct. I had never heard anything negative about my performance as IG from the Ethics Board. So I don't know what caused that. I have no idea. Because it could be a million reasons. Who knows? You know, somebody didn't like your tie or things like that. So there's no way for me to know why they took the action. But the effect it had on me initially was, well, how can I straighten this out? And, you know, and I got absolutely nowhere there. And I began to become ill in the middle of 2017. I had an aneurysm, which fortunately was discovered and dealt with. But I was in no position to continue. I mean, after all, I had come out of my fourth retirement to take that position.
Right.
Okay, so... Now, there was no interest in going back for me, particularly under those circumstances.
And so I guess to start with, you spend a good deal of your section or a good deal of your essay at the beginning in a section on your successes in the airport. So your office, you know, one of the more notable ones, your office looked into a large number of contracts that had expired at the airport and were being continued through a month-to-month arrangement without being rebid. They're costing tens of millions of dollars. You issued a report in 2013 that looked at, if I remember correctly, 10 of the contracts and found problems like contractors being overpaid, invoices that didn't show the work being billed for was actually being performed. So, but when your office first began looking at these contracts in 2011, and you pointed them out to then aviation director Iftikhar Ahmad, he decided to put some of these, problematic contracts out for open bids, rather than continue them on a month-to-month basis.
Well, just to kind of reset that one, I went out to meet the aviation director. There was something in his statements I thought interesting and seemed like a person oriented to good management.
Sure.
So I went out as a courtesy to speak with him. And as I said, he said the biggest problem here is these contracts and the high cost of operating here. We're scheduled to go to $16 per head charged to the airlines for the next year, or it's projected for 2014. And we're not going to get any flights from the airlines because we're too expensive to fly here.
Yeah, and just to add here, in your essay, you noted that $16 per, they call it per enplanement charges, made the New Orleans airport one of the more expensive airports to operate in the country.
Right, and airlines make their stationing decisions based on passenger demand and the cost that the airport charges them. And so if you charge too much above other competing airports, you're not going to get the routes. You're
right.
Not going to get the carriers. You're not going to get the nonstops. You're going to, you know, you're going to get the end of the line. And that's where we were getting to back in 2012, I think it was. And anyway, just getting rid of those contracts had an immediate effect. They had, management had canceled 100 of those contracts, and it saved them about $5 million a year over, they projected, for a five-year period. Of course, it continues as long as it continues. I wanted those contracts canceled, mm-hmm. and I thought the best way to do that would be to confront the board in public.
Which you did in, I believe it was October 2011, am I correct on that? It was during a meeting in 2011.
Correct. And as the essay says, I refer to their reputation as a pit of corruption and told them that I was placing them under continuous audit. What I wanted to do was to create an environment that was so unconducive to ripe financial gains through corruption that it would terminate, that they would go elsewhere.
And you see as a pretty big success in your efforts at the airport, it seems from the essay.
It's it's a Greek word, syzygy, mm-hmm. when everything, all the heavenly bodies line up. I had a relatively new IG, a new aviation director, a new mayor, and we had a city entity that was like a car that hadn't had the oil changed in 50,000 miles. Mm-hmm. It didn't work. It just didn't work. And the results were almost instantaneous, undeniable, and it was like a transformation. And I've never heard of such a success, and I'm not claiming success for me or the OIG, but I've never seen anything change like that. I've never seen such perfect conditions for change. And that's what it's about. Mm-hmm. You made reference, you looked into this or you looked into that. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not the way I operate.
Sure.
I look at an entity, mm-hmm. try to determine what its problems are, how serious they are, what their nature is, and so on and so forth. But if you want to change an agency, you don't go there and do one piece of work. The strategy is to repeat and repeat and repeat, follow up, new area, mm-hmm. follow up. Make them understand that you're going to be there and you're not going away.
Yeah, on this contracts report, I will note that you did at least one follow-up, is that correct, in the
correct.
Months after? Yeah, and there was significant improvement in that area, so that follows the pattern you're discussing here.
Yeah.
So to move on from the airport, another major section of what you've written, and you've when we first started talking, you made some reference to this. You write about the relationship between the office and the Office of the Independent Police Monitor, which at the time, it was the Independent Police Monitor was part of the Inspector General's office.
Correct.
That has since changed. But at the and that you say was a cause of some difficulty between your two office because offices because of divergent missions. Could you
their work didn't satisfy IG standards.
Sure.
Their work is would ought to be graded by PR.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, how do you otherwise evaluate an advocate?
Mm-hmm.
Advocacy is not our business,
okay.
except for good government
mm-hmm.
and transparency and accountability.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we don't operate like that. So it's completely impossible. Plus, I mean, just to make it perfectly impossible, the IG didn't have dismissal authority
right.
over one of his employees, which makes his other assistant IGs say, "Well, what's going on here? This is some kind of special unit within here."
And, mm-hmm.
they're not going to follow our rules and our standards, you know, that we've used for decades and decades.
So you didn't have dismissal authority, but you did in late 2015 recommend dismissal of Susan Hudson, the Independent Police Monitor, correct? And so I'm asking about that because you're characterizing her role as being an advocate. And it seemed at the time that some of your criticisms that led to that effort were because she was acting, or perhaps could be seen as acting as an advocate. So do you...
I have no objection to advocates, but they don't belong in an IG's office.
Okay.
Advocates belong in political organizations.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I mean, okay, so, but nevertheless, you do describe the office as being an advocacy organization. So do you still believe that she should have been dismissed at that time, or do you think that what has happened has been the, you know, that the outcome that eventually happened, the separation first informally and then formally, was the proper thing to happen here?
Well, yes, the problem was structural,
mm-hmm.
But there was also a personnel problem,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not going to discuss the personnel problem.
Okay.
But the main factor was that that office did not belong within the OIG. It was nothing like an OIG. It was antithetical to an OIG.
Mm-hmm. So, and I just want, I'm wondering if I can ask for clarity on your meaning in one sentence you have on the relationship. You write, "Even the most cost-effective Office of Inspector General in history could not halt a steady drumbeat of public criticism reinforced by a prevalent social narrative of perceived oppression and injustice."
Good line. Huh?
Yeah, it is a good line. I'm just wondering what are you referring to? What is the, are you talking about the criticism of your office?
Yeah, the whole thing. I was dismayed that it became public. And then it was David versus Goliath,
mm-hmm.
which was a myth.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that I was controlling our work products. I was saying you got to do something that's IG work and meet standards. But you know, this history, this city has a history of you know with regard to race and everything, and it is often used and abused for you know personal reasons and. This thing got to be David versus Goliath, which I find humorous. I haven't told anyone this, but I happen to be of mixed race.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my ancestor who came brought the family to New Orleans in 1835 from France was the product of a Frenchman and an African slave woman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's my grandfather's grandfather, if anybody wants to do 2 to the X. So, you know, I had, and this came, you know, this information came late in life with all the developments in, you know, computing and research, etc., DNA. And so it really didn't affect, you know, who I am or
sure.
where I came from or anything like that. But at the same time, it's not surprising. I mean, thinking about some shreds of things I heard as a child, and you know, my mother was very much a an opponent of using race for making any decision. And so, you know, that stayed with me. And I was a lieutenant colonel in the United States Army. And we had people of all races working for us. And we worked as one unit with no problems whatsoever.
So you think there was, so basically you're saying that you believe that there was a racial component to the criticism of your office and the troubles your office had with Ms. Hudson, who's black, and that you thought that was inappropriate?
I do. I don't think it's a good way to operate.
Mm-hmm.
Government is government, you know, and mm-hmm. you're going to have people of all races and thoughts and everything else in government. But they've got to be able to do their job as a government official.
Can you space specifically what you thought was the racial component of the criticism of your office, though?
It's all the news articles at the time that gave me the impression. Beyond that.
But what in? I just want to be clear when you're saying that there's a racial component. It's an interesting. Okay, your
inference.
Your inference. So you're saying that it was subtext.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's fair. I just wanted to be clear because I didn't remember it coming out explicitly in news coverage at the time.
In a post-interview review of the record, we found that race was brought up explicitly at least two times during the 2014-2015 dispute between Quatrevo and independent police monitor Susan Hudson. In 2014, Hudson accused Quatrevo of creating a hostile work environment based on race or gender, an allegation that the Ethics Review Board rejected following an investigation. In late 2015, responding to Quatrevo's call for her termination, Hudson raised the issue again, saying in a letter that she was one in a series of African-American women that Quatrevo had sought to fire.
So to move on from that, okay. the last and maybe the most In some ways, the most significant section deals with the Sewerage and Water Board, which your office started focusing on, I believe you write in your essay, in about 2013, ramping up with reports in 2015 and 2016 starting to come out pretty regularly, and some pretty major reports that came out from the office, reports that found criminal wrongdoing, for example. In 2016, right in the middle of your office's, you know, sort of very intense focus on the Sewerage and Water Board, Alan Miller, who we've already referenced in this conversation, is elected chair of the Ethics Review Board. As I believe you've mentioned, Alan Miller worked for a law firm that had a contract with the Sewerage and Water Board. Is that correct?
He was a partner.
He's a partner in a law firm. Yeah, so he certainly has financial interest in this law firm that has a contract with the Sewerage and Water Board. As this happens, you know, shortly after he is voted in chair, the Ethics Review Board votes to open a national search for a new inspector general, which is something that you objected to. At the same time, there are some other things happening or beginning to happen in the office. You say some certain elements in the office are kind of taking advantage of what's going on. And you're saying that the timeline, I'm going to quote here, the timeline suggests that the, quote, OIG's focus on the SWB may have prompted the board's decision. Beyond the timeline, do you have any specific information that you know that there was a direct relationship between your decision to focus on the Sewerage and Water Board and, you know, what this series of events that eventually led to you retiring?
No, there's no way I could know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But here's the problem. When a member of the Ethics Board, particularly its chair, creates the appearance of impropriety, whether it exists or not, is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
The image of a man under contract to the Sewerage and Water Board negatively reviewing the IG's report on the Sewerage and Water Board
mm-hmm.
is an appearance of impropriety. He gave every image in the public mind of somebody with two masters.
And I do want to add here that he He did, publicly criticize one of your major reports on the Sewerage and Water Board at an Ethics Review Board meeting, saying you were dealing in hypotheticals. Could you talk about that report? That was a pretty important report. So
that was the water quality testing report, and just to.
It was the lead exposure report, I believe.
Which one? 2017.
The first report.
Okay, that was on the reconstruction impact on the lead in the water. Now I've forgotten your first question.
I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about that report. The report about Sewerage and Water Board construction and the potential dangers it created for lead exposure.
We issued that report in July of 17, I think, and it itself was a spinoff of a report that we were actually working on. We were working on evaluating how well the Sewerage and Water Board was testing the water.
Right.
Okay. Whether it complied with all the requirements. When we came across the information on construction, mm-hmm. heavy infrastructure having a decided effect on the loosening of the corrosion inside the lead pipes and dropping it into the water. So we said, hey, this is more urgent. Let's do this. We did it. Then we went back to the water quality testing report. And just to summarize, it's what you would expect. Okay, they're mm-hmm. supposed to take a sample from a population. They had no records to determine the population.
Right.
They don't know how to take a sample. 10% of the residences tested were those of Sewerage and Water Board employees. Now, unless Sewerage and Water Board employees have grown, the workforce has grown so much that one out of every 10 people in New Orleans, or whatever it is, it's baloney. It's a polluted sample, and you can't make any inferences from it,
mm-hmm.
period.
Mm-hmm.
And just for lagniappe, they didn't know how to take the water out of the tap properly,
right,
so
right.
they were understating the results. So that was quite a report. We sent it to the Sewerage and Water Board.
Now, I'm sorry, let's clarify. Are you talking about the construction report now or the water quality report?
No, I'm talking about the water quality
report. Okay, sure.
Okay. We sent it to the Sewerage and Water Board for comments as part of our procedures. We got them. We had everything at that point. We had put it together. Ready to go. I signed it, ready to go. But you got to wait. We had an ordinance that said 30 days
right.
from the time to get the report, and that 30 days was a couple of days after I left.
Mm-hmm.
The report never went out.
Right. So, you sent it to the Sewerage and Water Board. Had you received the management's response to the report before you left? And their response was what? I mean, how did they respond?
The usual Cedric Grant response. Excuse me, let me retract that. Mm-hmm. The usual non-cooperative, nothing here response that characterized the Sewerage and Water Board's responses to our reports
mm-hmm.
throughout my tenure.
Mm-hmm. Did you beyond those back and forth and management discussions, I guess getting back to your assertion that the Sewerage and Water Board focus kind of led to all the things that happened in 2016 and 2017, beyond the back and forth and reports, were you getting pushback from then Director Cedric Grant, Mayor Mitch Landrieu on any of this focus?
I never spoke. I spoke once to Mitch Landrieu when he was mayor-elect. Mm-hmm. I never spoke to him again. No, there was no pushback that way. There was no pushback from the Sewerage and Water Board other than this lawyer standing up defending his client at the Ethics Review Board meeting.
Right. When he's defending his client, this was, to clarify, this was on the first report that was released, which was the
Correct.
Construction report.
Correct.
And he said that the report couldn't back up its conclusions, that you were dealing in hypotheticals. Is there, I'm sure you will not agree with this, but just to entertain it, is there something to him saying that unless we know there is a problem for sure with lead, that this is something that, that this is something that's very sensitive, causes people to panic. Is there anything to his argument there?
None whatsoever.
Okay.
You don't solve the problem or eliminate the risk by not thinking about it.
Right.
And we've done a lot of not thinking about things in New Orleans for a very long time. I was absent for 30 some odd years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's not good.
And but to clarify, and this was one of, and I would like you to, you know,
okay.
I would like you to explain it. I'm not defending his argument. I'm saying one of the arguments against was, well, the Inspector General's office is not actually conducting its own water testing.
Well, you don't have to test the water, okay? You need to test it properly, and
right.
It's apparently never been done in New Orleans.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, not for lead, mm-hmm. copper. No, that's a ridiculous argument.
Sure.
Okay, it's ridiculous. So you're not going to do anything about it?
Right. No. Yeah, that's
okay.
That's why I'm asking.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how many footnotes we have. 100? 150?
Mm-hmm.
We documented the science. We documented what the EPA was saying.
Mm-hmm.
We documented, we consulted with the experts on water, lead and water in the United States. Mark Phillips, EPA, right? No, he's the guy who led the Flint discovery.
Oh, the University of Virginia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we were in discussion.
Mark Edwards.
So we were in discussion with all those people, and they have no doubt about it, and it's not any kind of ideological thing. It's just it's water, and our drinking water has lead in it, and New Orleans is not the only one.
Right.
Not the only one at all.
Getting back to lead report number two.
Okay.
That was recently released in a BuzzFeed report. I know we're not going to go too much into that,
okay.
but I did want to ask. That you know the city and the IG's office, and correct me if I'm wrong, kind of have given the impression that they've disowned this report. Is that your impression as well?
From that article, yeah.
And so, again, saying it couldn't support the conclusions, they said it hadn't gone through legal review, which you had disputed.
Well, it's more than disputed. There's no requirement for one.
Okay.
There's an internal procedure.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one was conducted,
mm-hmm.
but the people there were not aware of it.
I see. So ultimately, this report is the 30-day timeline ends after your retirement, and now Howard Schwartz, at that time, was the interim. Was the interim IG? Do you know anything about the decision not to release it? What considerations went into that?
No. But he was seated next to me
mm-hmm.
when he listened to the ethics board chairman who would have a say in his application for the position.
Right. And at the time, to clarify, yes, he was applying to move from interim IG into permanent IG.
Correct.
So you think that, are you suggesting that that may have been part of his consideration and not?
Well, sure, it might have been.
Sure.
You know, it might have been for almost anyone in that situation. Whether it was or not, I have no idea.
Okay. And while we're on Howard Schwartz, prior to this, over the summer before that, Mr. Schwartz had conducted and a report had been leaked about one of the employees in your office, according to reporting at the time. You didn't approve the final version of the report, but you approved the investigation. Is that correct?
No, I authorized Mr. Schwartz to look into an employee complaint,
mm-hmm.
and he managed it because of the timing. It became some big whoop-de-do investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Does not articulate a single violation mm-hmm. of law, policy, anything. Okay. It suggests that employee, I think the word, popular word, was steered contracts. Employee had no ability to steer contracts.
Mm-hmm.
I approved all the contracts,
mm-hmm.
okay? And this was a legitimate contract. It was sole source because it was small in money, critical in time, and we knew the contractor, okay? And I will defend that decision to the end of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So. It's smokescreen. Have you read it?
I have not actually read
it.
I've never
read it.
Seen the actual
you should
report.
Read it.
Yeah.
It refers to the exhibits where all the evidence is supposed
right.
to lie. But guess what? There's no exhibits in what was released.
Right.
Okay.
So to clarify, well, I was not...
Everybody I know who's read it,
yeah,
it's laughed.
Yeah, well, that's... I mean, so I was... We were not the news outlet to whom it was leaked.
Right.
That news outlet didn't actually release the report in full. So I have not had an opportunity to read it.
And I think... How long has passed? 2 years?
It's been
two and
years
a half?
Now.
Three?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh. I still haven't seen any evidence to support these false claims.
Mm-hmm.
Not... Where's it? What's happened to it?
Right.
Why did it go away?
So...
You know... The whole thing about this, you know, you ask questions, and in large part they're rhetorical, but because human nature is what it is,
mm-hmm.
and no OIG is going to change that.
Sure.
Okay. So it's frustrating. It frustrated me because we had such great success. I didn't care about me. I mean, like I said, I came out of my fourth retirement for that,
mm-hmm.
to take that position. What was important was that an office that had managed in this environment, one of the hardest in the United States, one of the most difficult, to actually achieve so much.
Right.
I was astounded by the success.
And, but, I'm sorry, go ahead.
But it obviously disturbed somebody.
Right. So Mr. Schwartz, at the time, he'd been with your office for a while.
Yep.
He was a top employee, presumably trusted employee.
True.
And... This report, it's being leaked to the media. Mr. Schwartz, I suppose, standing behind his findings at the time, led to kind of a difficult period in your office.
It was over.
Yeah.
It was over. Because what it did was further divide the office between mm-hmm. audits / investigations and inspections and evaluations.
Mm-hmm.
There's petty jealousy about the number of personnel assigned and all that kind of stuff, and once I became an absolute dead duck in the fall of 2016, people felt free to do whatever they wanted to do.
Would it have been as much of a problem? Would Mr. Schwartz, who was, eventually he would have come back on as interim IG, but would he have had to leave for your office had it not been leaked to the media?
No, I'm not sure I understand.
Well, Mr. Schwartz wasn't... You strongly objected...
He was an employee at will.
Yeah, he was an employee at will. And he was... And I may be misremembering, but was he not terminated briefly before he came back on as interim IG?
Yeah, because when I analyzed that report and wrote my response to it, mm-hmm. which you should also read.
Yes.
Because, see, what ends up in the media...
I have read the response to
what
it.
What ends
yeah.
up in mm-hmm. the media is the repetition
mm-hmm.
of false statements.
Sure.
You make them enough times, people start to think there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
But if,
and so,
yeah,
I don't want to contribute to that. And I've said what I said in the report.
I guess the question though is if the report had not seen the light of day, if it had stayed inside your office, would Mr. Schwartz have been able to continue on at the time, or was part
no,
of the problem
no.
that this all led to this?
No,
big
I thought it. An action, a behavior that was not consistent with our
right.
legal requirements,
and that's what I'm trying to get
ethics.
To. Yeah, So I'm trying to get to was the report in and of itself a problem?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So now we've gone through all that. Now I guess to end, we've gone through all of this. The office is now separated from the independent police monitor. Mr. Schwartz is no longer employed with the office. We have a new inspector general that we've had for a while now. What have your impressions been of your successor thus far?
I don't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
All I know is what I read in the media.
Right, and there have been some. There was a brief period where his. The amount of work product that was coming out of his office was being criticized by the Ethics Review Board.
Actually, it was a quality assurance
Quality assurance review.
Which,
yeah.
See, in the ordinance separates the functions. The quality assurance review
mm-hmm.
is supposed to look at work products.
Mm-hmm.
The Ethics Board has nothing to
right.
do with work products.
So there was quality assurance review criticism.
Yeah.
Did you agree with that? I mean, you've seen the output from the office, certainly.
Well, I don't know what's going on inside the office and what's responsible for what. But, yeah, sure. We produced 140 reports in my time. Mm-hmm. It's with the last year being on, running out of gas.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised we haven't seen more.
Okay. Do you think that lack of output is in any way related to some of the troubles you've identified? I mean, certainly they're no longer connected to the IPM. Some of the problem employees are no longer with the office, but you do identify some problems that seem to be structural that go down to, the ordinance that set this up to begin with. Do you think that, perhaps whatever problems may persist at the office are related to those structural problems that you identify here?
It may be. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I think that's all I have for right now. I appreciate your time, and thank you very much.
Thank you.